I also want to say thanks to OCAP for the meal, and it's great to see everybody here to celebrate the anniversary of the June 15th demonstration, and to take a chance to think together about some of the next steps that we can all take on our own and with OCAP. And to start with, I just want to say that on Friday, a couple of us went to a town north of Toronto to hand out the new newsletters for OCAP and for ARA, which is the group that I work with, and all that stuff that's back at the table. And I wanted to say it was interesting, because the kids up there, they didn't know about OCAP. Like, it didn't have the name recognition that OCAP has down here. But people did know about June 15th. You know, they remembered it. Like, kids who were like 15, 16 years old remembered seeing it on TV and remembered what it meant to them. And, I mean, they're not alone. All across the country, people cheered when they saw that footage on TV, when they saw people ripping up cobblestones and throwing at them at the police. They cheered when they saw people fighting back and pushing back against police who were clearly out of control. I'm sure lots of people here remember lots of different events of that day. One of my favorites was watching the cruiser as it pulled up. There was one cruiser that went on the east side of Queen's Park all by itself. It must have been some kind of mistake. And it got surrounded and the windows were smashed. And, you know, it's a particular memory of mine. There was no mistaking the message of June 15th, and there was no mistaking the inspiration and the empowerment that people got out of seeing poor people and their allies standing up against this abusive system. And it's a system that kills people daily, that lets tens of thousands of children go hungry, that denies transportation to disabled people, that evicts people in the dead of winter, closes schools and hospitals, and it's a sick system. So people were inspired by that, and I'm sure that people were inspired so that maybe in the weeks that followed, they stood up to their boss and told him to shut it, you know? Or they decided to fight the eviction, you know, instead of just moving. Or they decided to go to the school where their kid was getting abused by a racist teacher and told them to, you know, shape up, right? They stood up for themselves at their own school when a principal was, you know, sticking them around. Or, I mean, basically I'm just trying to say that something like June 15th and gives inspiration to people and society in general, and there's reverberations that are way beyond just the event. And so why exactly did that demonstration resonate so deeply, and what was it about it that made it so successful and such a political victory? And I think that one of the most important things is that it was clearly like a lot of poor people who were there, right? Fighting for themselves, standing up for themselves. And OCAP had the credibility with people in the streets and in shelters, and they did tons and tons of work to flyer for that and to talk to people about it and talk up the demonstration. And that's why people came by the hundreds to stand up for themselves and to fight for themselves. And it's not often enough that poor people have a voice in this society, that have a political voice in this society. But on June 15th, poor people did have a political voice, and their demands were heard across the country. The other thing that was significant, I think, about June 15th and that made it really a successful event was the number of people from other social movements, other organizations, who came out and agreed to accept the leadership from a militant organization like OCAP and to put themselves there with OCAP. And that was really clear when you looked at who got arrested, which is what I'm supposed to be talking about mostly because I'm a defendant. So a lot of the people who were leaders or organizers or activists in their own communities and their own scenes, and that doesn't happen often enough either, not in our movements, that people who are active in a whole bunch of different communities and different scenes agree to come together for something and actually do something together, you know, and to back each other up when we decide to take a principled stand. So props to OCAP for making that opportunity happen. And I think like one of the key things there was that they organized it enough in advance that people could decide to like put themselves and put their organizations, you know, alongside of OCAP to and had the opportunity also to have some input into the planning and all of that. So So that's all the amazing stuff about that day. And now I'm just going to talk a little bit about the costs and who paid them. So first I'm thinking about the police brutality. On the day itself, you know, one man who had chucked a placard at some cops and run, and they caught him, and at the station they beat the bottoms of his feet, his ankles, as a warning not to run again. And I think about how cops piled on top of one woman at the corner of Sherburn and Girard, and she hadn't even been at the demonstration. You know, she was just in the neighborhood and saw her friend getting beaten and picked up, you know, after the fact. And she definitely paid a huge price on that day. I think about women that I saw all over the place who had blood streaming from their head, you know, bruises, black eyes. I mean, I really haven't seen that level of naked and very sort of personal violence often at demonstrations. Like, even in Quebec City, I mean, it was horrible, you know. But I mean, it was more, like, in a lot of cases, it was more removed. You know, they preferred to use tear gas and rubber bullets, not the baton charges, you know, and the fists and the kicking, right? So then after the fact, there were 46 arrests. All but four of those cases have been settled, and you're going to be hearing from John, and of course John and Stephen and Gaetan are going to hear, I think on Wednesday, whether that, where their case is going to be settled, whether they're going to be facing yet another 3 or 4 month trial. But we all hope that the state has had enough and isn't going to run the risk of losing really badly, and that they will not spend another $1 million to try them. There's also one more woman who was arrested about a year ago, much after everybody else, when she came to court in support of another defendant. But for the rest, though, I can say that of those who paid the cost, it was undoubtedly homeless or close to homeless men who paid the heaviest price. Most of those who were arrested who were in that situation didn't get bail, and many plea bargained to get out of jail as quickly as possible, but several men did serve several months in the Dawn or in the West because of June 15th. Those of us who got bailed out waited on average 18 to 24 months before our cases were resolved. For some of us, that was more difficult than it was for other people. For two people, it meant that getting arrested at another OCAP action landed them in jail for weeks and house arrest for months more. For some people, the outstanding criminal charges interfered with travel or employment. One person lost two jobs over June 15th. For some, conditions of their release prohibited us, well, actually for most of us, prohibited us from communicating with OCAP, prohibited us from going to demonstrations. And those conditions were really frustrating, and they're really isolating, and yeah, I just can't stress that enough. Thankfully, those conditions didn't last all that long. For everybody involved, I think I can say it's a bloody pain to go to court again and again and again for set dates, and to know that everyone there is getting paid except you and the other accused. For those of us who got bail, about half pleaded guilty in exchange for a reduced sentence. Many of them were prepared to fight their case, but changed their minds at the last minute when their lawyers soberly recommended to them that this judge was never going to acquit them, no matter what, you know. And of the people who did fight their cases, about half won, were acquitted, and about half lost, and were convicted. And in all of those cases, it was more to do with what judge you had that day than anything else. And it was certainly instructive, I think, to see such a big group of people go through that system and experience that firsthand. And I also have to say, of course, that the legal help from the lawyers that OCAP organized was amazing, and their recommendations were on point. Let's see. Most of the people who were convicted or who pleaded got a slap on the wrist. They got probation, they got a conditional discharge, some got community service hours. There are a couple of exceptions, but for most people it was more of a warning than a punishment. And one of the small conclusions that I've come to is I've never pled guilty and I've never been convicted of anything, but I have to say that people should look at those statistics and consider earlier on in the process whether they are determined to go through with the trial no matter what. Because if they're not, they might want to plead out a little bit earlier and save the aggravation of months and months of you know, being on conditions and going back to court again and again. So one of the things that we learned in this process, I think, is that the good legal support is totally essential for political organizing. I think after June 15th, Sue was solely responsible for setting everybody up with lawyers. And that's just way too much work for one person. So now there's a crew of people, the Common Front Legal Collective, who are taking on that kind of work. And so it's more spread out, and that's an amazing development. It's something that I think everybody's going to appreciate in the future. I also want to say that in our case, it took us defendants a good 6 months before we organized ourselves to sit down together with our lawyers, of course, and to discuss our situation. And I wish that could have happened earlier, that we valued our collectivity more. It's such a kick-ass group of people, and I'm very honored to have had something in common with them, and I wish that we had valued that more from the get-go, and I certainly encourage people to make that effort if you're ever stuck in a big group, you know, for a group trial, because going to court is and facing the possible repercussions of getting arrested in such a situation, it's very alienating, very isolating for many people, and even when you're part of a big group, and I'm not exactly sure all of the reasons why that is, but I think it's because you're forced to consider the possibility that you're going to go to jail and that you're going to lose your community, and just facing that is really damaging and really it's really alienating and isolating, and we need to acknowledge that and develop ways to deal with that. So with that in mind, I just want to refer you to the table at the back where we brought some paper and some envelopes and some addresses and names of people who are in prison. Among them, James Semple, who's a supporter of OCAP. He's in the Don jail. He was arrested on March 20th at an anti-war demonstration, and he was denied bail. So he's sitting in the Don for political activity, and people should just write a letter, you know, and say hi. And we'll mail those. But I also brought addresses for a whole bunch of different political prisoners in the U.S. And I don't know about you, but I've never written to Leonard Peltier or Rumi Abu-Jamal, and there's no real reason why not. So please, you know, consider doing that. The addresses are there, and envelopes and so on. So to conclude, I guess, I just wanted to say something about June 15th and how great it was, and yet how none of the demands of that demonstration have yet been met. The demand of repeal of the Safe Streets Act and the police brutality and harassment that has ensued from that. That the Landlord-Tenant Act, Tenant Protection Act, right? The Landlord Extortion Act is still in effect, and the welfare cut is still also in effect 3 years later, so it's even more onerous now than it was. And so what are we going to do? You know, June 15th was awesome. How can we build on that and do better, you know? And I'm thinking that if the cops are worried about 1,000 or 2,000 people coming to the lawn of Queen's Park with clear demands and ready to push them, how would they feel about 10,000 people or 20,000 people? I mean, this is a city of 4 million people, you know? And we can totally do it if we work together, if we have a strong strategy. So, and if we build on the strengths and strategies that made June 15th such a political victory, and that means being deeply engaged with the people who are directly suffering the impacts of all these progressive, horrible legislation and political priorities that the system has, and it also means maintaining the connections and the alliances with the other groups in the city and in the province who share the same concerns, and even if they work sometimes in different ways. And so that means diplomacy, but even more important, it means planning ahead so that people can make the decision to support a project, to support an action, and they can have some input on it. So this upcoming election is a great time to press the demands and to ensure that the priorities and the voices of poor people are on the table in a way that they aren't right now. And that's why I'm here to support OCAP, and I really look forward to hearing from them and the other speakers and all the comments that people have about these plans and how we can work together. Thanks.